This is an NPR News special. I'm Ed Gordon in Washington, D.C. Every election is about issues, and this one is no different. In a race this close, the black vote looms large. So this hour, we'll talk about issues of import to black America. What are the concerns that are driving black voters to register in record numbers, and are the candidates addressing those concerns? A bit later in the show, comedian D.L. Hughley weighs in with his take on election 2004. But first, African-American voters and the issues. We start with a panel of journalists who have all been covering national politics for many years, including this one. Here with us in Studio 3A are George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publisher Association's News Service and BlackPressUSA.com. And Rosalind Jordan, network correspondent for NBC News. And finally, NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams. I thank you all for joining. Greatly appreciate it. Let me start with you, Rosalind. What has surprised you most in this election?
Boy, you start with the hardest question. I think what has surprised me the most is the fact that domestic issues, urban issues, issues that matter to people who live in urban areas, have not been discussed with any considerable depth by either candidate. And I think that's a fair statement. People have been talking about the economy, but really in these macro terms. What's the unemployment rate? What's the consumer confidence level? And obviously talking about Iraq and the war on terror. We have not talked about education beyond whether or not No Child Left Behind has worked. And I think there is a real hunger out there among people to actually talk about quality of life issues, things that really matter to their daily lives. I mean, you know, we're not all fighting the war in Iraq, but people aren't getting a chance to talk about these issues with the two national candidates.
Juan, what about you?
Well, I think a couple things surprised me, Ed. First, I think the Joint Center for Political Studies and Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies poll showing that about 18% of African Americans would vote for President Bush surprised me, because, as you know, last time it was only about 8 or 9% that voted for President
Bush. Do you buy those numbers?
Well, I mean, I take them at face value. I must say that, remember, a poll, like any poll, is a snapshot in time, and we don't know what was going on at that moment. I think it was before the debates. I might be wrong on that. But what you see there is a moment, and we don't get that much polling in black America, so we have to take that as at least legitimate for that moment at which it was taken. Does it last? Does it persist to this moment? I don't know. The second thing that surprises me is the tremendous impact that the gay issue is having among black church-going people, and potentially being a problematic issue for Senator Kerry, with people portraying him as more supportive of civil unions and gay marriages.
We should also note, for clarity, that poll was taken before the last debate. George?
I think what has surprised me more than anything else is how both sides have playing with the facts. Or anything but the facts. They've been making these allegations repeatedly, even when they've been challenged by such groups as factcheck.org. One, the difference, the Joint Center poll, to me, didn't surprise me because they were wrong before. I think before they had black is about 74% for Clinton, I believe it was Gore, Al Gore, the last election. They were completely off their rockers. What you find in these Joint Center polls is they'll say there are certain issues, and they're absolutely right about that. There are certain issues that the African Americans are very conservative about. But when it's time to actually vote, the voting is quite different from these polls, because they were wrong about the same numbers the last time.
How much do you buy that this causes a quagmire, if you will? No fire, quite frankly, for either candidate, that zeal that we've seen before. It seems that it's more of a backlash vote. And the idea that we see more and more disenfranchised voters, yet we hear about record registration and people talking about going to the polls. Which side do you think is going to win on Tuesday?
Well, you know, I spoke with Senator Kerry last week, and I put that to him. I said, you know, what are you counting on beyond anger at President Bush to get people to the polls? Because turnout is the whole kit and caboodle. It's the whole story right here. And what he said was that people vote their self-interest. And here I think he was talking about the base. And when I say the base, he's not only talking to African-Americans, he's talking to Latinos, he's talking to Jews, he's talking to women, largely single women, and he's talking to labor. And he says, if you look in terms of, you know, who's going to offer you a social safety net programs, who's going to do more in terms of providing for education of your children, who's going to do more in terms of manufacturing, blue-collar jobs, promoting those jobs, keeping those jobs in the country, then he believes people have a self-interested reason to go out and vote for the Democratic ticket.
Roslyn, you raise an interesting point, though, with the importance of the black vote as a bloc. You would think that you would hear more than just the superficial mention of issues of import to this group.
And it would seem to be that that has been the case, because I talked to party officials from both camps last winter. What are you doing this year to reach out to voters? And the Democrats seem to have come through more so on their promises than the Republicans in terms of organizing get-out-the-vote efforts, in terms of organizing voter registration efforts, in terms of actually putting out paperwork that people can look at and say, okay, does this plan make sense? Would I be willing to pay for this? Is this something I would not be interested in paying for? The Republicans, from what I've been able to tell, haven't done nearly as much. You get the same blanket message that you basically get for the entire population, which is the president's policies are going to work regardless of where you come from. And then coming back to a point that you brought up, Juan, about, you know, the number of people who may be inclined to vote for the president. Granted, this poll was taken before the final debate, but I wonder, especially because if you look in the internals of that poll, there's a shift among older African Americans who seem to be more inclined to support the president, which I found surprising.
That is surprising.
I wonder if that has something to do with this Medicare drug coverage plan, even though about half of those polled said they never heard of it.
It may have something to do with that, and it may also have to do with the moral imperative that we're hearing from the black church to a degree, George Perry.
Well, first of all, I don't buy the numbers, so let me say that up front. I think they oversample.
I think you've said that twice. Go ahead,
Jake. Well, I said up front twice. I think they oversample the conservatives in our community, and as I said, they've been wrong before. But I don't want to underestimate the whole issue that religion is planned, period. I was on a panel in a Interfaith Alliance in Chicago not long ago, and we were just talking about both sides. How do you plan it? Think about it. When John F. Kennedy ran, people were saying, will this person take orders from the Vatican, from the Pope? And now here's another Catholic running now, 40 years later, and they're saying, would you talk more about religion? I think Democrats, and I've written a column about this before, I think Democrats really underestimate how important moral issues are with voters. And I think Democrats have just picked up any little group coming along and really haven't dealt with that. And for the African-American community, you have a very strong religious base, people who are basically conservative but not conservative on civil rights.
We should note to our listeners, we'll be taking your emails, TOTN@NPR.org is the address if you'd like to send some questions to our esteemed panel here. Juan, let me ask you about the role of black leadership in all of this. Have they done enough to position the black vote to garner the spoils if indeed we see the numbers that are indicated in polls and it ushers a particular candidate in office?
Well, if you're talking about black leadership, I guess the number one black leader in the country still is Jesse Jackson. And if you're talking about Jackson's involvement, he has now signed on with the Kerry campaign. It's been going on a little bit, but it's been slow to come, and I think Kerry was slow to embrace him. I think Kerry was slow to reach out in terms of the black community. Now, when I posed that question to him last week when I was talking to him for America's Black Forum and National Public Radio, he said, Juan, it's your problem, not my problem. He said it was the press problem. The press hadn't been covering his efforts to go into the black community to meet with the Congressional Black Caucus. He said the minute he won the nomination, his first meeting was with the Congressional Black Caucus. He said he was at Ebenezer early on in the campaign. All these things he says have been going on. There's a little bit of frustration there. You know, his campaign aide saying basically they had a meeting with some black ministers recently and said to the black ministers, what are you guys waiting for? What do you want out of John Kerry? Well, I think what people are looking for is some charm, some evidence that he really cares, that he identifies. And I think that's the result is that people don't feel that warm towards him. And so when you think about the black leadership, to be specific about your question, it goes beyond Jesse Jackson then to people who are in positions like the NAACP, Kwasi Mfume, Julian Bond. They clearly are Democrats. They clearly are Kerry supporters. But are they enthusiastic? I don't see it yet.
Well, it doesn't have to be that, though, Juan. It doesn't have to be warm toward him, as long as they have enough anger toward George Bush.
Well, that's the only thing, George. I think everyone can agree on that. But then, you know, then it comes back to the argument that President Bush made during the summer when he spoke at the Urban League. And he said, does it serve the black community to always be voting Democratic, or does it serve the black community better to split its vote? And remember, Al Sharpton famously came back during the Democratic convention and said, well, you know what, that donkey's carried us in terms of Voting Rights, Civil Rights Act, etc. The problem with that response, of course, is that now I think lots of people are saying we've got a new set of problems, and they're looking at exactly some of the things, the options that this president has put on the table.
Of course he wants to say that. But the problem is this. If Bush, as he has said to his ideal Supreme Court justices, Clarence Thomas and Scalia, and he will get a chance to appoint 3 or 4 to the Supreme Court, and every major civil rights decision has been decided by one vote, that's enough to scare black people to the vote. And they don't have to love Kerry. They're scared of that because that won't affect the next 4 years. That will affect the next 40 years.
And that goes back to the issue of whether it's a backlash vote or not. Rosalind, here's an email. I want you to pick up on this if you can.
Sure.
Harrison Chastang of San Francisco wants to know why the president has refused interviews with black media outlets, BET, Black Newspaper Association. Tavis has tried to interview him. Why does the president expect black support when he refuses to do this, these outlets and others?
That's a very good question, because the Congressional Black Caucus is still wondering, where's the meeting? He did do a radio interview with April Ryan, I believe, of American Urban Radio Networks. Not April?
Not an interview. What they did was allow both candidates to address the African-American community, but no questions.
Yeah, in fact, I was involved with that, and so you have President Bush speaking for 15 minutes, Senator Kerry speaking for 15 minutes.
Okay, because, you know, they told us, you know, they characterized it as an actual interview, you know, just as this morning, you know, with Judy Keene. That's a really, really good question. But, you know, you also look at the larger issue. You know, I work for one of the big three networks. It's almost impossible for us to get sit-downs unless we're the main anchor of the nightly broadcast. You know, there are people, you know, at the upper echelons who can't even get an interview with him. You know, this is a man who's only given 11 or 12 press conferences since he's come into office, you know, whereas Clinton couldn't stay away from a microphone by comparison. It's a very, very vexing question. He'll talk to Runner's World or Running Magazine, but he won't talk to people that ostensibly they're trying to, you know, get to the polls. I mean, I don't know how the GOP is going to get 25% of African-American votes when this sort of thing happens.
George, here's the precarious position I think the African-American electorate finds itself in. Dems seem to, by thought of many black voters, take them for granted. Republicans seem to ignore them. You always hear about the lesser of two evils. What do you tell a black voter who feels that?
Well, you get the less of two evils, you're still dealing with evil. I mean, you do have a party that takes you for granted, but you have another one that takes you for a ride. And you got to make a decision. It does. There is a difference. There's a difference when you look at Cheney's record when he was in the House for 11 years and he got F every year on the NAACP report card. There's a difference when you look at Kerry and Edwards' civil rights records. When you look at the NAACP, they got A's every year. When you look at the report the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights did on Bush, he got failing. They didn't give it a grade, but he was a failure when it comes to civil rights. So there is a contrast, and it does make a difference.
Juan, when does it become tiresome for the black voter to hear, oh, I'm for affirmative action, and my cabinet will look like America, and you know that you'll get the two black seats, and the same responses year after year after year?
I think that's the problem. I think lots, especially younger black voters, look at the whole political spectrum and they say, wait a second, does this make a real difference in the quality of my life? Is something going to change, or is it more of the same? And in fact, that's where Bush can actually boast something when he talks about the presence of black people at the top of the foreign policy apparatus, people like Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice. You know, African Americans never been there before. Now, you might say clearly the policies they have pursued are not policies that are in line with popular opinion in the black community, but the presence nonetheless makes a difference. Similarly, President Bush, in terms of going after the Leave No Child Behind with a black Secretary of Education, trying to improve the quality of education in the black community, again an effort. And you think about the faith-based initiative, George touched on it, the church is being so important.
All right, you know what that music means. We're going to take a break here. We're talking about issues that matter the most to African-American voters. You're listening to an NPR News special on the African-American vote and the 2004 election. I'm Ed Gordon for NPR News. This is an NPR News special on the African-American vote and the 2004 election. I'm Ed Gordon in Washington, D.C. We're talking about the issues of import to African-Americans. Our guests in Studio 3A are George Curry. He's editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service and BlackPressUSA.com. Rosalind Jordan is network correspondent for NBC News, and Juan Williams, an NPR senior correspondent. Again, we welcome you and thank you all. Let me go to an email that's interesting from Kathy in Oregon, who says, "Hey, nobody is mentioning the most important new, quote, black politician, Barack Obama. This man is going to move the nation," she suggests. "How much can one man be a spark that invigorates black America to hang in there, possibly? They tout him as the new star."
I think it comes down to one question. Will people truly embrace him? There's been some grumbling I have heard among people who are saying, well, how black is he really? Because his father is from Kenya. His mother is a white woman from Kansas. He does not share the cultural history of millions of African Americans who can trace their ancestry to those who were in slavery.
Though we should note he'll be black enough when he tries to catch a cab in Manhattan.
Or Washington, for that matter. The important thing here is you don't get one pitted against the other. I don't question Obama's blackness. I think he's as black as anybody else. But the problem comes in when people try to pit an Obama against an Al Sharpton. You need both of them. You need somebody working inside, and you need somebody as an outsider, and we need both. And I think he'll be well received.
Well, I think, you know, it's a matter of a new generation of black political leadership, which has been very slow to evolve because the black political experience in this country is born out of the civil rights experience, Ed. And when you think back to that experience, people are very slow to say to someone like a Jesse Jackson, your time has passed. Al Sharpton, interestingly, is the one who's been trying to push Reverend Jackson off of that throne. But as a result, people like Obama have been slow to emerge. Remember, Obama was beaten just recently in a congressional race by Bobby Rush. And the idea was, it's not your time yet, young man. Is what Obama said to me in an interview I did with him. He said, you know, the old ladies would say to them, you know, I like you, young man, you're different, all that, but it's not your time yet. I think most black voters are still locked into that civil rights way of thinking.
And we should also note that there is some stress between the new guard and the old guard of black political leaders.
Right.
Big stress. And so I think that when the writer, your email writer, writes about Obama, I think Obama is very exciting. I think he's just terrific. And I think he's going to be a new kind of leader. But remember, that new kind of leader does not necessarily represent what is the established black leadership. Most of the people in the Congressional Black Caucus, most of the people who've held office as mayors, even Doug Wilder as governor of Virginia. It's a different generation. It's a new look.
But for the record, though, Sharpton and the Reverend have made up. Al ventured to Chicago and met that Operation Push, and so they've made up again. I think you're talking about two different things. I think you're talking about, at a statewide level, you need an Obama. He has to appeal to a larger crowd, and that's fine. You need that level. But when you look at a congressional district, there's no African-American Republican who can get elected from a black district. Every African-American Republican in recent years in the House has been in districts that's at least 90% white, so they don't go there representing white
people. Here's a very interesting email. I've talked to a number of people, black leaders, off the record, and they are very concerned about this. The email reads, "Please comment on the fact that African-Americans will be voting for the last time as first minority in 2004 elections, since it will rapidly be Latino population's first minority, making them the most important minority in the 2008 elections, and to some degree making the African-American vote less palatable." That's from Michael in Illinois.
I don't know what he means by less palatable, but I think his overall point is the Latino vote is becoming more and more important. And I think you see that in the strategies of the campaigns. Lots of money expended in terms of ad buys, et cetera, in the Hispanic media market. Less so initially in the black media market. Kerry's campaign had to be pushed to make those buys.
Right.
And if you look at the numbers right now from the perspective of the Bush campaign, they'll say they got about 65% of the Hispanic vote in 2000. They're trying to push that up towards 70 because it's such a close election. If they can just get that little margin, they figure it might be the difference, especially in some of the key states. With the black vote, I think they were trying to push from about 8 or 9% up toward 15. Boy, if they get that 18 that the Joint Center's talking about, they would just think they had manna from heaven.
But let's bring them back to earth. First of all, African-American, we look at voting age population. Maybe in the future it's going to change, but right now, African-Americans outnumber Latinos 2-1 in voting age registration. Secondly, people try to talk about the Hispanic vote as though it's monolithic, where the African-American vote is. For now, you get 90%, around 90% every time for the last 30 years. Now, the difference with the with the Latino vote, however, is that that Cuban American in Florida has very little to do with the Puerto Rican in New York or the one from Mexico, Mexican American in L.A. So you're not dealing with the same kind of block there that people talk about when they talk about black Americans.
And you also have lower voter registration rates among various Latino communities. Mobilization is very, very difficult that they're finding. And so I don't know that it's really a concern for at least another 10 years or so. And then why does it have to be an either or? You know, which is the question. Yeah.
Why allow them to pit the two
exactly
groups?
Well, people want to do that, but I must say I pick up on this all the time, you know, it's because I think the census has a problem with this too. But there are a lot of black Latinos. And so the census doesn't discern that, you know, you got to be this or that. Well, it's kind of crazy. But I would say this one other thing on this topic of, you know, when you think about the gatekeepers in terms of American political life and talk about the minority vote, the minority voice, it remains black controlled. If you look at the numbers in the Congress, it's far above the black percentage. I mean, percentage of black elected officials in Congress versus Hispanic elected officials, blacks outnumber them. Black elected officials in state office, local office, it's still black people who are, I think even in the media, are represented as the voice of the minority.
But this is a challenge, though, and it's something African Americans will have to face. We got to start learning to work in coalition with the Latinos if we really want to say the disadvantage in this community will be served. And quite frankly, there has been friction in different places because there are Latinos who say, you know, the African Americans treat me the same way the white does. And so there's a whole lot of growth to be developed there. But I just think that right now is a key period for both.
I would hope that it's not as much friction. You know what I noticed wherever I go in the United States? Black people and Hispanic people will share a neighborhood. They'll live next to each other. I don't see that. I see more residential segregation, black, white, Hispanic, white. But black and Hispanic, I see them in the same neighborhood.
You're right, but I'm talking about power sharing.
How problematic do you believe on Tuesday will be voter intimidation? We're hearing from the BBC this week that they say they uncovered a secret document obtained inside the Bush campaign headquarters in Florida that suggests, and of course possibly in violation of U.S. law, that they are trying to disrupt voting in that state's African-American voting districts.
It's the Republicans who are doing it. At least that we know about.
Well, you have two strategies. You have Republicans saying it's their advantage to challenge where they say illegitimate votes, and therefore we're going to have people in the polls to make sure we keep those numbers down. It's Democrats who are saying we need a larger number because if we figure more people go, it's going to help me. So both of them have their political motives there. But in terms of, I see it even among the black Secretary of State in Ohio, that they are being challenged at a time where we have the worst record in the industrialized world for voting. We should be encouraging people to do that. We'll find all these different ploys out there to do the opposite.
Does any of this matter, Juan, if the war remains as it is today in terms of the issues of import to black America really being looked at?
Well, I think Rosalind was on this right from the start, that when you look back over the campaigns and the debates, so little talk about African-Americans as a community, you know, so little talk about poor people or those who are disadvantaged in the country and their status. And now, if you talk about Iraq as an issue, obviously the minority community, not a big fan of the president's decision to go into Iraq. I think the decision to go after Osama bin Laden, to go into Afghanistan, that's not the issue. I think, you know, black America, Latino America, very patriotic, did not want us to stand still after somebody had come into our neighborhood and done something like that. But the war in Iraq is a different issue and very unpopular. So when you say, does it matter? Well, I think minority opinion does matter, adds to the sense of anger, I think, at President Bush tremendously in the country.
But I mean in the sense of the attention being paid, because the first and foremost, let's be honest, no matter what happens, no matter who sits in the White House, they're going to have to deal with this situation first and foremost. And the monies that are being spent on war are going to affect whatever programs they're promising.
That's the major thing. Because, you know, you can have all the compassionate talk you want to. In the end, we're talking about already with the new appropriation, $225 billion. You're also talking about people saying, yeah, you're right, Juan, they want to strike back, but let's strike back at the right person. You know, Osama was not in Iraq. And so that you come to a question of judgment there. And then you already see some of the memos being circulated now saying, okay, once this is election over, there will be serious cuts in domestic programs. And in regards to who's president, we will have fewer resources. And that's the thing that faces us.
Well, we haven't talked about the nation's credit rating because of the size of the budget deficit, how much that's being jeopardized by the size of it. As George just said, we haven't really talked about what domestic programs might be affected. All of you baby boomers are getting closer to retirement, and you know there are fewer of us Gen Xers who are around to pay into the system. It's the ultimate pay-as-you-go system. Where is that money coming from? And so you're right, George. It doesn't matter whether it's Bush or whether it's Kerry. There are some very, very difficult questions that need to be dealt with, and they're not going to be solved in the next 4 years, and I don't know that they're going to be solved in the next 8 years.
Well, wait a second. I don't want to go crazy here. I mean, there's some big differences between these two candidates. You know, I think that there's a big difference in terms of tax policy. I think there's a big difference in terms of health care. There are big differences, and it's a consequence. I hope people, as they go to the polls, I hope everyone's going to vote, but I think they should understand it's not a matter that this it's not going to make a difference. I think there is going to be a difference. I think when you hear Senator Kerry say that he would do away with taxes on those who make more than $200,000 and use some of that money, for example, to help sustain Social Security or to help to deal with the high cost of prescription drugs, you have to understand that's a difference. When you hear him talk about how he would try to keep jobs in the country, again, you know, there's a track record there for job loss in the part of the Bush administration. Kerry is playing against it. We don't know if his policies would work, but he is clearly speaking to that issue.
How important does the Supreme Court loom, particularly with the events of this week and William Rehnquist?
You know, I was in the Supreme Court when the University of Michigan cases were argued.
In it and not on it.
In it. In it. I was in there when the decision was handed down. And I'll tell you, with a 5-4 vote upholding the University of Michigan's law school, I mean, that was the most important civil rights case in a quarter of a century. To me, whether we go forward, certainly when you're talking about affirmative action, which the president opposes, but you want to talk about affirmative action, sex, and never really define what that is, it's a do-or-die issue for us. And it's because, you know, I'm a Southerner. I grew up in Alabama. That was the last place we could always go, the Supreme Court. And if Bush gets reelected, and if he appoints the same kind of judges he's been appointing so far at the lower level, it's going to mark an end to that being a court of last resort in terms of favorable civil rights.
Rosalind, does it surprise you the lack of chatter we've heard, quite frankly, though, with the issue of affirmative action, not just from the candidates, but the demand of this electorate to hear about it?
It does, but I think where people are much more concerned about, is my kid going to get sent to Iraq? That's what I'm hearing more about. But I think, you know, when people actually stop and start thinking about these issues and they go back to, well, what's the fabric of my daily life? You know, we haven't also talked about the Patriot Act and how if you have anything contrary to say about what's happening with this administration, theoretically, you know, if you believe some people out there, a file could be opened on you. That's a threat to your civil liberties. No one's really talking about that, you know, because that's not the thing that is making people feel insecure right now. They're more concerned about, is my kid going to Iraq? Is my neighbor's kid going to Iraq? And is my job going overseas too?
Yeah, so I think it's those big issues. And I must say, when you talk about getting out the vote and even the anger at Bush and whether or not Kerry Edwards can rely on anger at Bush, you look back at what happened in 2000 and you look back at the state of Florida and all the trouble that occurred there. And you remember the promise that was made. Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, is going to pay for this in when he comes up to run for governor again in 2002. Well, guess what? Jeb Bush was easily reelected in 2002. And a lot of the anger that was thought that was going to drive turnout, and especially in the African-American community, against Jeb Bush simply did not materialize.
But what we're seeing now, though, Juan, is the early voting. Particularly, you see African-Americans doing it in Florida, in certain state counties, at a higher level. I think people are upset about that. And Florida wasn't the worst case. I think Florida was about the fourth or fifth worst state. Illinois was worse than Florida. And people always point to Florida in terms of votes not being counted. So I think we're going to see a record turnout.
I'm Ed Gordon, and you're listening to a special on the African-American vote in the 2004 election from NPR News. Before we let you go, I'd like each of you to quickly tell me a little prognostication for me, if you will. Tell me what you think you'll see in terms of turnout for the African-American community this go-round.
Very long lines.
You expect a big turnout.
Very long lines. I think that there are going to be people trying to sneak into the line after the polls close so they can say, I was here when the polls closed at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. I think there is that much interest in this election.
They say already the estimates are it's going to go up from 106 million turnout to about 120 million overall in the United States. I imagine there's going to be something of a surge in terms of African-American turnout. How big, I can't tell you. But I will tell you this, that I think there's going to be problems with all of these monitors coming in to watch people, to challenge people. I fear that this could be a huge fiasco, but you can anticipate there's going to be trouble, there's going to be complaints and lawsuits and litigation down the path. Whether or not it's a sufficiently large turnout to make a difference, I don't know.
I think there'll be a record turnout, and I think you have groups like these Coalition. They have a phone number, 1-866-OUR-VOTE, set up so when people have problems, you can call in, you can get legal assistance right away, and they're prepared for it this time.
Do you think we'll see anything like we saw 4 years ago?
I agree with Juan. I think it's going to be worse.
Really?
But
you don't think by Wednesday morning we'll know?
I don't think we'll know.
You don't?
I don't think so. I think there will be at least one or two states that are very problematic, and also consider the absentee ballots that are already being sent in. They still have to be counted. They're not counting them right now, which is something people forget. They think, oh, I mailed it in, it's being counted. No, they don't open them till the polls close on Election Day.
And they don't count them for 5 or 10 days after.
Right. So it's all provisional anyway. But I don't think I'll be home for a week or two, at least.
I hope it's not that long.
Well, we certainly hope it's not that long. And lastly, if you had one issue that you wished, just one word, had been covered more extensively, what would you say?
Well, I would say certainly affirmative action. And I would say the reason we're talking about the issues that have not been covered is because they did not face African-American questions at the presidential level, and that's why you're not getting the question we really care about.
Rosalyn?
Education. I think that there are a lot of questions. I hear from members of my own family who are teachers about whether or not No Child Left Behind is really working. We should have talked about it more.
Juan?
Well, I think it's jobs in a word. I mean, when you heard Senator Kerry mention it one time, he said, you know, half the black men in New York City are unemployed. That's just got to be one of the most depressing, stunning statistics of our time.
Juan Williams, Rosalind Jordan, George Curry, thank you very much for joining us. It was a great roundtable. We greatly appreciate it. When we come back from a short break, we continue talking with nationally syndicated columnist Stanley Crouch and Ellis Coase, contributing editor at Newsweek. You're listening to an NPR News special on the African American vote and the 2004 election. I'm Ed Gordon for NPR News. We just heard from our panel of journalists about what they've been hearing regarding the issues that African Americans care about most. But what are some of the issues we're not hearing about in this election from the candidates? Joining us now from NPR's New York Bureau are Stanley Crouch, a nationally syndicated columnist and author of many books. His latest book is called The Artificial White Man, Essays on Authenticity, and Ellis Coase, contributing editor at Newsweek and author of Bone to Pick of Forgiveness, Reconciliation, Reparation, and Revenge. I thank you both for joining us. Gentlemen, always good to talk to you.
Delighted to be here, Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stanley, thank you very much. Let me ask you, Ellis, let me go to you first. Do you think either candidate has done enough to win the black vote?
Well, it's interesting. I know that you referenced in the earlier section the Joint Center survey, which shows that Bush is up a bit. But in fact, in point of fact, this election is going to be more than anything a referendum on Iraq, and by extension, the war on terrorism. Nobody, including Kerry, to whom the black vote would be a large part of his base, is making an extremely energetic appeal to the black vote at the expense of that issue.
Stanley, what about you?
Well, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, but the biggest thing is that, I think Bush is going down. I think Kerry's going to take him. And I think that the large registration of black voters and the MTV, Bruce Springsteen rock crowd are going to be very important in situations, particularly when the two of them say are neck and neck and they need some votes to tilt the balance one way or the other. I think that's where those votes are going to come in. I think Bush is going.
Do either or both of you believe what our panel just suggested, in that we won't know come end of Tuesday who indeed goes to the White House?
Well, I don't care when we know. Bush is going.
I have a belief that we will know. I think it's probably not going to be quite as close as some of the polls tend to say. But the reality is that we won't know until election night.
Stanley, do you believe there's a moral compass that should be attached to the bully pulpit of the presidency? And if so, has either man demonstrated that they have it?
Well, as far as Afro-Americans are concerned, I don't think either one has really addressed black Americans. I think Bush has been held in by the fact that the Republicans are basically a racist party, and they took all of the Dixiecrats and turned them into Republicrats, and they've been very careful to not give the impression that they're too close to the darker American. And on the other hand, I think that Kerry doesn't really, to me, seem to be particularly interested in Afro-Americans. And I think that the biggest issue is always that people don't understand that the interests of Afro-Americans are American interests. We're in the United States. We're not in Haiti or someplace. And if we do better, then the whole country does better.
That's an interesting question, though, because I think absolutely there should be a moral compass in the presidency. But I think what has happened is that Bush in particular, but both of the candidates to some extent, have basically tried to substitute the fact that they are believers in a particular kind of religion for morality in any larger sense of the word.
Ellis, what do you believe in terms of issue should have been talked about that we just have not heard about?
Well, one thing I would love to have the candidates talk about is the whole issue of reentry for offenders, for felons. Bush mentioned it once in a State of Union address and then dropped it. You never heard about it again. Neither candidate has really addressed it. And we're talking about a future in which one out of every three black men, perhaps, is projected to spend some time in prison. Those people, most of them, the vast majority of them, are entering our communities, will be spending time in our communities. And the question that I'd like to see them deal with is, how do they intend to deal with this population and to make it productive?
Stanley, what about you?
Well, I think that there's been very little discussion, or there's very little thought about how black Americans will be prepared for the post-petroleum age, for the outsourcing age, for the way in which so many things are determined by technology, and the fact that very soon people will be hired, assigned, paid, and fired by their email addresses. So in a certain sense, we're going into a world of technology that I don't think people act as though black Americans are not in that period. Maybe they look at too many rap videos.
What do you tell young people and those who live through the issues of Florida and believe they're coming their way this election, who feel disenfranchised, that they should still be part of this political process?
Well, see, people can't be punks. So you have a bad run, or you have bad luck, or you're in a fight, you get knocked down. So what? The fact of life is that life is always difficult. And I think that people being encouraged to be a little whining, "Oh, you did me wrong" types is not as important as people being given the impression that, look, the important thing for you to have is will, discipline, and a vision that you keep, that you sustain throughout your life. That's the most important thing.
And actually, I've spent quite a bit of time on college campuses in the last few months talking to people about the election. And I don't get that sense that people are basically saying, hey, let's give up. What I get is a lot of anger. There's a lot of frustration that this campaign is not addressing the things that are a concern to them. But there's also a sense there, as I think there is in most of the rest of America, that this is the most important presidential election in at least a generation. And what I'm hearing is that these young people are saying, we don't intend to miss it.
Stanley, do you buy that this is the most important election in generations?
Well, I don't know about that. That's like the greatest, that's like the advertisement for, the greatest heavyweight fight of all time. The one thing that we know is true. The Bush policies, unfortunately, are not good for the United States in terms of ecology, in terms of taxes and taxes, outsourcing. There's a long list of stuff that anybody can pull out that would suggest that 4 more years of the Bush administration is not good for the United States. Now, whether or not Kerry is going to be good for the United States is an open question. But it seems to me that there's a closed, simple fact that Bush, Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, and Cheney have got to go.
And we're not just talking about four more years if Bush gets in. I mean, you referenced the Supreme Court earlier. Inevitably, there will be at least one, probably more like two or three appointments made over these next 4 years. And that's going to affect us for years to come, not just the next four.
And finally, in terms of what you would like to see happen as far as the black vote is concerned, Stanley, what would you like to see on Wednesday morning?
I'd like to see an enormous number of black people turn out and vote, but I would also like to see when they are polled that they make it clear that they're for either party that gives them what that includes them in the vision and actually seems to have a serious program
right
to deal with their problems. Because I don't believe in the Democrats or the Republicans.
Ellis Coast?
Well, this election is clearly going to be decided in a handful of states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida among them. And I think what I really would like to see is the black vote in those states be huge and be ultimately decisive.
Stanley Crouch, Ellis Coast, joining us from New York City. We greatly appreciate your comments and your wisdom, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thanks.
Comedian and actor D.L. Hughley joins us now from NPR West in Culver City, California. And you may have noted that you've seen D.L. quite a bit throughout this political election season. D.L., welcome.
Hey, Ed, I wonder when I start. I'm not nearly as fascinated with politics as people think I am.
But we've seen you a lot.
Yeah.
Have you always been political?
Not all. My interest in the political process stems from the fact that I was one of the people who thought that Bill Clinton was the greatest president of the 20th century, and I think that that George Bush is the devil. And there's really no other. Those are two vastly different opinions of people that I see at the seat of political power. But I'm not a political animal by any means. But you know, I listen to what a lot of people say, and I travel the country. I've flown 5 million miles in this country alone, and I go in big cities, small cities. I've been in front of presidents, and I've been in front of plumbers, and I think that. What I see across this country is a lot of fear and apprehension, and there is no sense where, even when you watch the Olympics in the basketball, a sport we're clearly supposed to dominate, we don't feel good about anything. We don't feel good about ourselves, and nobody feels good about us. And I think that there is a reason for that. I think that we clearly know that what's going on isn't quite right.
I'm Ed Gordon, and you're listening to a special on the African-American vote in the 2004 election from NPR News. We should also note we're talking with comedian and humorist D.L. Hughley. Let me ask you this much. Politics, is it an easy issue to make fun of?
Everything's easy to make. Man, let me tell you something. When you got a man who literally is in the middle of debates, and they go, there's a flu shortage, and they go, well, don't take a flu shot. I mean, that to me is funny to talk about. When you got a guy who literally... is arguably the only president, at least in my recollection, that clearly doesn't have a mastery of the English language. And everybody says, well, he doesn't because he's just not good with the English. When you went to Yale College, the university, and you don't know how to speak, you're either dumb or you're lazy. So, I think that all those things are hilarious.
Is it easier to make fun of one party than the other, or does it really go back to your political affiliation?
Well, I think that everybody, you're just kind of a sum total of your life's experiences. I think that it's equally as funny to make fun of the Democrats. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I'm an independent. But I think that the thing that I find so funny is that the Republicans tend to be so strident in their views. Like, they are against abortion, but for war and the death penalty. Like, we want the baby to live, so that way when he comes here, we can kill him. They just strike me as the more ironic of the party.
Is it easy to make fun of individuals, for instance, physical characteristics or the like? When you look at Kerry, what's funny about him?
I think that he looks like a tree. Remember, he looks like one of those trees from H.R. Puff and stuff? He does. He looks like a tree. But George Bush looked like the guy from Mad Magazine, Newman.
Alfred E. Newman. Let me ask you this. Are you going to vote this year?
I can't wait to vote.
Really? Have you always voted?
No. I haven't always voted at all, and I think it was a lot of being just naive. But when you look to me, and I play a lot of colleges. As a matter of fact, I'll be playing one Saturday, and I've never stopped performing and never stopped interacting with people. I don't see the apathy that a lot of people are saying that they talk about, particularly in the black community. Mm-hmm. I think that they realize when wars are fought, we're going to be the bulk of the people dying. When the economy goes bad, we're going to suffer the brunt of it. When there's medical emergencies, we suffer the most. So when America gets a cold, Black America gets the flu.
What do you tell young people who suggest that they're not going to participate in this process and say to you that you didn't at their age?
Well, I tell you what, any people that don't participate in this process deserve whatever they get. I honestly believe it. If there's a draft, if somebody comes in and appoints potentially three Supreme Court justices who kind of repeal affirmative action and a woman's right to choose and a host of other things that directly affect African Americans, I think they get what they deserve.
D.L. Hughley, does it say anything about where we are in our society with the fact that Dennis Miller, Bill Maher, John Stewart have important voices, quite frankly, during this election season?
Well, I respect all of those three people, and I think that their voices are only respected in the fact that the payoff for hearing their opinion at the end of it all is a laugh. I've been on a number of shows with all of these politicals. You know, William Crystal comes to mind, the father of the conservative movement. I think that those people are so used to talking to people who are like them and who agree with them that they never really get a chance to interact with the real world. The one thing that I say about those three comedians is that they at least have to be around a diverse, divergent group of people, so they have an opinion that is more educated than me. They get to be amongst the people, so they make an observation that's generally more accepted because average people, everyday people kind of notice the same things.
Before we let you go, just as the funny side of it, is one party better than the other in terms of your ability to make jokes?
I think, honestly, that Democrats probably party harder and tend to oversimplify things. Liberal spirit tend to oversimplify things. So at least to me, their heart seems to be in the right place. It seems to me to be a conservative or a conservative Republican, you are more selfish. My taxes, what about me and the government stays out of my business? I think that you have to have believe you're more important than everybody else to me.
Well, we're apt to see what happens on Tuesday, D.L. Okay. Hughley. Thank you, man.
Thank
Always
you.
A pleasure to talk to you. Greatly
Likewise.
Appreciate it.
Likewise.
And we thank you for listening in today to our special on the African American vote and the 2004 election in Washington, D.C. I'm Ed Gordon. Thanks for listening.